Take away the money. Take away the fame.
He has come down to this possession.
Stitcher.com, iTunes, and ChicagoBullsPodcasters.com. And where else, Chris?
TuneIn Radio!
We are now also on TuneIn Radio for your mobile listening pleasure. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that we so lovely call On Bulls, the show that is strictly, utterly, and totally dedicated to the Chicago Bulls and NBA talk. I am Big Dave.
And Chris.
It's happening. We are back, sir.
Yes, we're back. The draft happened, my friend.
The draft happened. We didn't just want to be on here wasting your time. You know what I'm saying? We know you got lives. You got things to do. We know people did want to hear what we had to say, but we wanted to wait until we actually had something to actually say. And after that draft, we definitely got some things to get up off of our chest assist. Cause that was an interesting draft. I was telling, people at, Doug Tonis's, house that I hadn't been that excited for a draft in a minute. I don't know why, but I was really excited about that draft.
It sounded like he was probably more excited about the other teams and that and the prospects, you know, rather than being excited for the Bulls per se.
Yeah. Cause for the Bulls, I didn't know. So I was just like, best player available. Take a pick of 22. You know, my college, knowledge of Bile doesn't extend that far, to where I can know who's going to be the 22nd pick. Unless I called a couple guys like Tim Hardaway Jr. or something that year or, you know.
Yeah.
It varies, but usually I'm like, And so when they, at 22, I was just like, okay, whoever they take is the best player available. I'm going to roll with it. But those first lottery picks, I was into that, man, because that number two pick, I was really wondering what the LA Lakers were going to do, and they did the total opposite of what I thought they should have done.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to my, like I said, I don't watch a lot of college. Every year I pay attention to it a little bit. My brother, though, on the other hand, watches a lot of college basketball, you know, and he said D'Angelo Russell, he reminds him of a Harden kind of type. So he gave him mad props. He's a pretty good player. He's gonna be good. That he's not surprised that LA chose Russell number two, but he understands and that he sees the floor well. He's gonna be more of a scorer than a point guard, but he can also run point. So he wasn't surprised. So no, but it's pretty good. And check out the I appreciate his thoughts and about the college game. So when he says something, I kind of pay attention to it. So
right,
I trust him.
Yeah, and D'Angelo Russell is something also, again, my brother was also very high on. And I remember watching him a lot in the tournament. And I know he can ball. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it like that. That dude can ball, and he's special. He is definitely special. But this was interesting because we didn't grow up in that kind of era. We always grew up in the, yo, man, you got the big man that's the best person available. You always took the big man first. You never really took the little guard first. But it shows kind of a change in, you know, of the guard, man. What the little guard, the point guard, is truly more valued than a big man.
Yeah, especially in L.A., right? No, if we get a big man, you know, Shaq and Kareem and all them, so, and Gasol.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a shame for them, you know, going for more of a ball handler and score. You know, like, and we know this. So we say this all the time. It's hard to find people who can handle the ball and create their own shot.
Correct.
And that's rare. And I guess D'Angelo Russell is the guy that they think they could do that at the pro level at a good clip and going to be a good player. So, yeah. Okafor, you know, big man, sometimes, you know, they don't quite live up to expectations. But I mean, you talked about it in the car, like, not many people from Chi, top five, top three, a bust in the NBA. You from Chicago, you top three, top, you know, you pretty much going to ball. So,
I
personally like Okafor. For some reason, I do over Towns. Mm-hmm. I just have a feeling about Okafor for some reason. But, yeah, a little surprised, but we'll see Russell. You know, like I said, a ball handler and someone can score. on a team that's going to need scoring and needs someone to distribute the ball. Yeah, so the Lakers going to be they upgraded, you know, their team, and they should look good next year, a little better. Of course, better. You can't get worse than what they were last year.
That's true. But also, I think the Lakers, you know, they don't do anything. It's all planned out when the Lakers got something hooked up. So also taking D'Angelo Russell, I think that was also signaling that they're going to get one of these big guys that are out here, whether it's Kevin Love, whether it's LaMarcus Aldridge, whether it's even DeAndre Jordan. They're going to get one of those guys, man. So,
yeah, I feel sorry for anybody to sign DeAndre Jordan, my cousin, for a mass contract, because I like him, but, you know, you can't spend money on guys who can't shoot. It's just weird. But, I and L.A. has struck out in free agency last couple of years.
It's weird to say.
It's weird to say. And, well, yeah, Gasol was a gift, though. That was a gift. But it's been a while, so it's too many, you know, like I said, Love and Aldridge is out there. They have to land somebody, right? They have all that money to give away. And so they got nice point guards. Say I got a nice point guard, you know, score. Yeah, it'd be nice to team up with a nice power forward. And LA's going to have a nice, young, talented squad.
Yeah.
And through the draft, so most, a lot of it. So, yeah, they're going to be good to watch. Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch, man. So I'm interested to watch what the Lakers are going to do, man. But, yeah, that when they took that pick, I was just like, wow. Because I'm just so not used to seeing the little guard go over the big guard. But, again, he's going to be great. Let's just say that. D'Angelo Russell is serious business. He's serious business. It's just I love Okafor's game. It is NBA ready. It is NBA tailored. Now, the defense, of course, is something to be desired. And the scouts out there were like, well, maybe I heard some reports saying that maybe he's going to be a 2010 guy, but maybe he's a two-time All-Star kind of guy. And, you know, I don't have that thought in my head at all. I just have him, you know, being a beast.
Yeah, if you're that big and you're only a two-time All-Star, that's not – I mean, Dang is a one-time All-Star. So, I mean
– Two. No, Dang's a two-time All-Star.
Well, you know. That, so, you got to hope he's more than – you draft him at number, what, three. You got to hope that he's more than a two-time All-Star, right?
Yeah, I do. And like you said, man, listen, if you're top 10 and you're from the city, I mean, come on. Usually you're going to be all right from Michael Finley on down. Usually you're gonna be pretty, pretty nice. I can't really think. I'm gonna have to comb through, you know, these drafts and just look and see, you know, Chicago born players who have been taken in the top 10 and just see, you know, where their careers are, because the ones I'm thinking of in my head, hey, they're all pretty awesome, man. We're talking, you know, Wade and Finley and Garnett and not even Chicago born. I count Garnett because Garnett got Farragut. I count him.
Even Matrix around the way.
Yep. I don't know where Iguodala went, but
you made a couple All-Stars too.
Yes, and an MVP, Chris, and,
Of a finals.
We'll get into that a little later. But let's talk about these Bulls. Man, let's talk about the Bulls draft pick. They drafted a guy out of Arkansas. I know it's Arkansas, but I like saying Arkansas. Bobby Portis. Now, I've never heard of Bobby Portis. I've seen Bobby Portis, you know, when I would turn on, you know, some college games.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen him play, you know, but I just wasn't sitting there analyzing Bobby Portis. So off of your first initial reaction, Chris, how did you feel?
You know, since the draft party, you know, everyone when Vaughn, you know, you look at what's left on the board at 22 and you try to like nitpick about, you know, what that one guy who's better than, you know, the other guy by such little margin. And so when I got Portis, he looked familiar. Like I think I see that guy play before. Mm-hmm. But like you said, just like myself, I didn't really focus on him in this game too much. So they got him, and a couple people at the party, you know, waiting their opinion with the knowledge about Portis. Mm-hmm. I felt cool with the pick, you know.
Yeah.
So it was it felt like a solid pick.
Okay. Now, so when I saw him and I'm watching the highlights that they were showing, I honestly wasn't that impressed watching his highlights. I was like, eh. And then when I saw the comparison to Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That kind of just, I was like, whoa.
There's only one Rasheed Wallace in NBA. No one's like a Rasheed in NBA, barely.
If Rasheed wanted to, he could have been the best player in the league.
Right.
He just didn't really want to. I don't think he won. I think he liked playing. He wanted to win, of course. But I don't think he had that drive to want to be better than everybody, because he had every skill. He, again, Chris, you know I love big men who have no weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no weaknesses at all. And, you know, it's just, his only weakness was himself.
Exactly.
You know, he could have easily been Hakeem Olajuwon. And, I mean, even better, because he could handle the ball and shoot the three.
Right.
I mean, he was terrifying on the court. And not just because he was yelling at everybody, but he was terrified of playing basketball. But seeing that comparison, you know, kind of piqued my interest in him. So, of course, you know, I went to the lab, immediately went to go see, you know, who this guy is, you know, went to Draft Express, because I trust Draft Express. because when we were having this conversation last year about Nico, I leaned heavily on their analysis, and they actually changed my mind on Nico. And I talked about it here on the show, and I said, I was saying things like, you know, he's tougher than I thought he was. He had an NBA game. Like, before, we were just like, this dude, no, you know how we and you feel right. about those things. But seeing that swayed me, and they proved to be, you know, correct in their assessments of him. So I went and I looked that up. Bobby Portis, Chris, let's see, he's averaged about 17.5, about 9 rebounds, only about a block a game, which is not good for a dude 6'10". but here's the thing, Greg, he shot 54% from field goal. He was 54%, and he shot 46% from the 3-point line. That stood out to me.
Yeah, exactly. Just like you said, I watched some I went out there and watched some video, and that's the first thing that stood out to me too, was the fact that he could step back and shoot a J. And then he stepped back further and shooting threes. And like, oh wow, he has a J. What was disappointing was how you finish at the paint. You remember Nico at the paint for what I saw. You tap him on the arm, he just can't get the shot up. You know, very kind of weak around the rim, you know, very standard, you know, shots. That ain't anything creative. But he had a J, a little fadeaway. You know, he wasn't scared to shoot the ball offensively. So that kind of shot me. I don't say shot me, but it impressed me that he would step back, he, you know, go beyond 15 feet and shoot that J on you. So that, like, you know, just like you, that surprised me.
Yeah, definitely surprising. And I mean, anytime you're a guy that big and you're that much of a threat from the 3-point line, you do what we love talking about, and that's spreading the floor. So they're going to have to honor him if that 3-point shot is hitting, because that's a heck of a release he's got. He's got like a Joe Kim Noah release from the 3-point line, man. It's, but hey, 46%, you can't argue with that. Let me look at the positives. I'm just going to go off of what I saw. I'm not going to go off of what they were actually saying, because, you know, I like forming my own opinion. He's physical. He's definitely a physical dude. All right, and I like the way he runs the floor. I was complaining about that yesterday to you, Chris, about Bulls players running the floor and how Jimmy Butler was pretty much the only one, and Taj too, he runs the floor well, but how Jimmy Butler just knew where to be when he was running the floor, knew when to make the cut. And watching this guy in college, watching Portis, watching these clips and highlights, I saw that. I was happy. I was like, oh, he knows where to be when he's running the floor. And I mean, he was the first one to start the break. When the ball was loose and it got in play, he was the first one out of there, man. So he ran the floor very well. And he's got, of course, he's long. So he's going up, you know, he's going up strong.
And speaking about running the floor, also on defense, what I saw on tape, you don't see big men too often try to attempt to guard, you know, guards full, you know, 95 feet to 93, whatever, 90 feet down the court. He did that, and I could see that. So when Paxson and guard form and see a big man get low and then try to guard someone full court, and then on defense, you know, hedge guys, jump screens, get out there, get low, distract the point guard or the guard, the ball handler, get back on defense, their eyes light up. And I know when they saw his the way he played defense or attempted to play defense, his understanding of defense at that level, you know, just knowing, kind of knowing what to do, you know. I know they're probably smiling, like, oh my god, at least he has that kind of foundation down pat. The offense you can learn, but at least on defense he has some understanding of how to play guys, and he can, you know, unlike Saul, don't stand 10 feet back from the guy off the screen, you know, get up from the guy, distract him, shooting the ball, distract him, hedge him off, whatever. He has that kind of instilled in him, built in already coming into the NBA. So, yeah, full court on both offensively and defensively kind of stood out to me a little bit, too, as well.
Yeah, that was good. That was definitely my next point, how agile defensively he is. And like you said correctly, being able to defend at the top of the key, being able to defend the perimeter. When they would run the press, He was guarding the first person with the ball. He was the first one up in the press, Chris. He was right. the first one up in the press. He was the first one. So whoever got the ball, whoever the ball handler was, usually a point guard, usually a smaller, quicker person, he's guarding him. And that pick and roll, you couldn't do anything because they would switch off. When they would switch off in the pick and rolls, I mean, he was right there. And he's in the face and he's backing guys up to that 3-point line. And since he's got that length, I mean, it was a problem, you know, and you're right. Cause I hear you saying, Garpak's eyes lit up because mine lit up when I saw that. I was like, wow, this big lanky guy can defend a perimeter of smaller shooters. Like that's going to be tough to run a pick and roll on these guys or when you're trying to switch off. I mean, you don't lose anything on defense when that happens, if he's playing like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, you like the shot blocking to come into matter when he's able to do that. But defensively, he seems a little bit more sound around. Offensively, you know, jump shot's fine. You know, 3-point, maybe NBA 3-point shot. I don't know. Maybe that'll come. But but to me, what the negative was what I saw from him, limited video, albeit, but what I saw from him, his moves in the paint. And getting shot up and scoring in the paint as a defender. Wasn't too impressed about that. What are your thoughts?
I wasn't impressed at all with that. You hit that on the head. His post moves were, you know, much to be desired. Didn't have any footwork down there. He got the ball. Every time he wanted to do a post move, it was always on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely a right-hand dominant each time. And he had no moves. I mean, at all. Like when he was there, and it's funny because he's strong enough. Which is interesting for a guy. He's 6'10", about 225. So honestly, I wasn't thinking him being super strong, but he's strong enough to get you down on that block, you know, and post you up and do those things. But he does not have any moves down there. He has no moves whatsoever. It's something, of course, he can develop in the NBA. So it's not a problem that's going to linger unless he doesn't, you know, try to get better. But Go ahead.
It may linger a little bit because he may realize, you know, I could shoot that 15 foot jump shot. Let me just do that, you know, which is fine. You know, that's the NBA going. NBA is going now, but also coupled with the lack of offensive moves in the post is the fact that he's not a great leaper. Why his shot blocking is, you know, his stats aren't that impressive because he can't get up the flow. You know, open court you can finish a little bit. You know, he's almost 7 foot, so you can throw it down when he's open. But offensively, because like what I saw when he had contact on the N1 plays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he had small hands, but the ball would just fly out of his hands. Like he had no second effort of getting the ball off the glass and scoring.
Mm.
So yeah, I hope that maybe that improves with the NBA. He'd be able to finish around the bucket a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a willingness to back you down.
He does.
So maybe when he gets mismatches, he won't be afraid to go to the bucket and score. I look to him to rely on that the little jump shot he has a little bit in the NBA.
Now that's back to the positive of that. I definitely like that jump shot. I love perimeter shooting big men, guys who can hit that free throw line extended, a la Bill Winnington, a la Horace Grant, guys who can hit that shot and keep people honest and keep that floor balanced. You drove me crazy, especially last year watching Joe Kanoa not take those jump shots. They were wide open. I didn't care if he missed. I didn't care how bad he missed. I just wanted him to keep the floor balanced. And he just wouldn't take the shot, and he would try to create something else, and it was a turnover. I'm watching this guy every time he got that ball, and the fact that he can actually put the ball on the floor and dribble and create his own little space, you know, for the shot, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that's a good thing you brought up, was that several times I saw him take guys off the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, in the NBA, you know, maybe he won't do that so much, but the fact that he understands 3-point stance, he understands I'm a threat, shooting a jump shot, and also going to the bucket and getting the foul. Well, shot, I didn't expect that also from watching his tape, so that was kind of a nice, pleasant surprise. See a guy who's confident enough at his size, at 3-point line, the college street, to pump fake and make a move going left or right to the bucket. So that, yeah, he's definitely a threat outside the paint more than in the paint, and that was good to see.
Yeah, it was definitely good to see. But here's the thing also, to go back a little bit to the weaknesses, when he would get the ball on the elbow and it'd be cleared out and he makes that move, because he had a really good initial first move and he would make that move, hit him with the spin. But once he would do that, he was lost.
He lost, yeah.
He was lost. He didn't, he was like, okay, Here's a hook layup.
Yeah. Like I say, it wasn't pretty with him finishing. You know, he'd make the little, you know, the crab jump step, whatever, move, and you know, maybe he'll learn the art of pump fake a little more at NBA. But yeah, it wasn't too impressed with his moves to the basket. It was kind of funny. I kind of jokingly told someone at the party. I said, "Hey, Horace Grant," and he looked at me because I was crazy. But yeah, you know, because he had one jump shot in the highlight. Now I didn't know that he got shoot like that. I just joking kind of because I saw him that jump shot during the draft, you know, whatever. But watch his highlights. He has a J. So, and Horace wasn't the best at finishing. It wasn't the prettiest at finishing around the basket, but he was crafty and he finished around the bucket. Maybe he could get some of that in there. Maybe it won't be pretty, but effective at the hoop.
Yeah, because, I mean, his shot isn't pretty. I mean, his form isn't pretty. Nothing about that is pretty, but we just wanted to go in. Yeah. I care less how it looked.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think he's one of these guys, granted, you know, maybe you know more about this than I do, but wasn't he have a troubled childhood and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they did. They spoke about that. I didn't read deep into it, but he didn't come up easy. And that's what he plays with, that chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, those seem to be the type of guys that that passing the guard foreman really like.
Mm-hmm.
Butler, you know, come for nothing, work hard, and love the game.
Yeah,
leave themselves kind of thing, and I think that's. They saw that, and they saw the defense, the way he did on defense. I think that he's in the mold of a high character. You know, I don't think he did bad. Maybe he's something to come out, but high character. We didn't come for nothing, made himself to something, work hard kind of guy. And I know why they like him. That's, you know, those are three things that high character, come for nothing, work hard. You know, and it looks like they know what they're doing on defense. Those three things, Paxson and Garfield was like, bet, got him, let's get him.
Yeah, he's our guy. We love him. And they said it. They said they had him rated very high and thought he would be gone mm-hmm. by the time that they got him. So they were very excited about getting him. The things, what things do you think that he can improve on this year? What things do you think that he needs to focus on improving on?
It's funny. No, of course, things we mentioned, the weaknesses we mentioned. But I wonder, I don't know quite yet, because I wonder what Horford's offense could look like. So I wonder what the team would need from him.
Mm.
If Noah gets hurt early on, you know, mm-hmm. you hope not. But if he does, you know, whether they need him to score more,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm assuming Nazi Muhammad is not gonna, you know, be there.
Yes, true.
Yeah. So and you know, even Taj, you know, he's supposed to be healthy coming in after the surgery, the ankle problems. But you wonder what the team needs from him, and you wonder what the offense is going to give him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Tibbs, you knew right away it's just going to be this hustle and this and guard. With Horberg, you don't know. Maybe Horberg is going to say, "Hey, you got a J. I want you to shoot jump shots. It's one of the plays for you. Shoot 15-foot jump shots." Horberg may tend to lean toward him being more offensive player on the Bulls rather than, you know, mm-hmm. the last year's regime. So, yeah, but of course, you know, the offensive stuff around the basket, you don't really, I don't know if you really approve on that. That's like a natural kind of thing.
Mm.
You know? You know, he doesn't have big hands. He doesn't jump well. So, I don't know. There are plenty of guys that don't finish well around the basket, and they really have improved at that ability, you know, later on in the career. I think it's just a natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took LeBron James how many years to be comfortable backing up to the basket? And
see
Right? So, but you hope that he becomes a little more experienced around the basket and could finish well. Maybe that's it. But what I saw is like Nico. Nico get touched in the paint, throws balls in the air, and hand flares, and no kind of strength of trying to score. Maybe with him, I want to see him, when he gets fouled, go up strong and try to get 3-point play and don't just lose the ball.
I think the difference with that is Nico is trying to do that, though.
Yeah, but Nico would get touched and the ball fly all the place.
But that's what he do that on purpose. That's the Blade D-Box school.
But see, that's the point. I want you to go up there and get hit, and then actually try to throw at the backboard or something, get in the bucket.
Right.
Don't try to exaggerate the foul by throwing the ball in out of bounds and falling.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. I don't think Portis was exaggerating the foul. I think it's more to your point that he just might have the small hands, or he was not, you know, strong, you know, going up. I don't think it was so much a Nico thing, because I think Nico, it was just going up strictly to look like that.
But
you know what I'm saying?
The thing about Nico is that I bring him up because later on in the year, he became stronger at doing that. Even Stacey King, you know, mentioned that Nico now is coming better at finishing strong when he's getting fouled.
Mm-hmm.
So compare Nico, and that's what I think Portis could do. I think he could be better, because that was that NBA. When you found the NBA, he supposed to you know, look better at finishing the bucket. Mm. So I think like Nico, he could get better at just finishing plays at the close to the hoop. And, you know, he should, cause, you know, high percentage shooter, you know.
Yeah. And you touched on a point, I also wanted to make, and I'm glad you said it, but I think it's going to be a huge plus for him playing in this offense with Fred Hoiberg. Cause, even Portis said it in an interview I just watched that he was doing on NBA, TV. He said Hoiberg likes to run his bigs. Mm-hmm. He likes to play his bigs, and he let his bigs play. And he said he likes the fact that his bigs can get out and can shoot. And he said, you know, and that's his game. Like, right. He's getting out and he likes to shoot. I mean, 43%, he's shooting. You know what I mean? The guy likes to shoot the basketball. So I think playing in this style offense, actually helps his game a little bit more than somebody who is strictly a back to the basket kind of guy.
Right, right. And that's something we're going to see with Hoiberg. You know, I think he's kind of tasked from Paxton, like, hey, this be more offensive minded. And I'm pretty sure Hoiberg has that in mind. His boss was telling him to do that. I'm pretty sure that he's going to, you know, run plays for the guy, and he's going to have moments and opportunities in the offense where he's supposed to shoot the ball, supposed to score. So we'll see. He plays, you know, and also, like mentioned before, you know, I'm pretty sure Hoiberg's gonna rest these guys, you know, Noah and Taj and Gasol more often than last year. So maybe he's gonna see more minutes than you expect this year, and he's gonna contribute a little more.
Yeah, and one more point as far as his weakness was concerned was the fact that he was a really good offensive rebounder. Like, I've watched him getting offensive boards, Chris, and he just knew where to be, and he knew where the ball was going. And he was the first one to the ball. But on the defensive side, where he has to block out someone, he could not hold his block. And the guys in the post were just like, okay, get out of the way, little fella. You know what I mean? And, you know, it was just different on the offensive side of the ball as opposed to the defense. Because, you know, offense, you're not looking to post to box out anyway. Mm-hmm. He was just timing it perfectly and going in strong, you know, and getting that rebound and putting it back in. But on defense, I got to box this guy out. I got to make sure he doesn't get in there, and I have to go up in time. And he's not a great leaper, as you said.
Right.
So all of that played negatively on the defensive end as far as his rebounds were concerned.
Yeah. Well.
But, hey, I'll take the offensive rebound. Look at Tristan Thompson. He's about to make $50 million off of being a really great offensive rebound. Like, for real. It wasn't just his defensive rebound. Right. It's the offensive
rebound. We have our Tristan Thompson now on our team. Somebody could jump with the guy for once.
Right.
We don't have broken knees and broken ankles. That guy should leap in and battle to do for boards.
Right.
Hopefully.
But the problem is, Tristan Thompson is a great offensive rebounder, and this dude can't block out. That's the problem.
Thompson could jump a little bit. So.
Yeah, that's true. But interested to see him. Question for you, though. Do you think after watching all of this, everything you've seen on Bobby Portis and all that you know now about him, do you think that he can legitimately, maybe in a few years, replace Joakim Noah?
I think so. Somebody has to replace him. Are you asking? So that's what you're asking me. In 2 or 3 years, will he be offered a contract, or will he be a bust and not play?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what I've seen, I don't see. He seems like a guy that should be in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how he contributes, how much he contributes, I don't know, but I could see the. Remember, with Noah. It's the offense was lacked.
Yeah, right.
The offense. It was mainly the defense and the, you know, guarding the basketball, barring the pick and rolls.
Right.
Is what you wanted from Noah, and you know the energy, of course. And he, from what I saw, Portis was like better energy, like you say, like Mitch before the video of him guarding guys across the length of the court, you know, jumping out. So it looked like he had a lot of defense energy. Looks like he could be a guy that could step in and be a short term replacement or maybe a long term, but we'll see what the Bulls do later on. Of course, we don't know. We can't see into the future, but he's definitely a guy that looks like he could contribute,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the Bulls for some time.
And it's true.
Especially in the NBA in general.
Yeah. Looking forward to watching him in the summer league play.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. So, actually looking forward to watching him and McDermott, actually. So.
Yeah, Doug. Yeah, because Snell's not there anymore, isn't he?
So. I think Snell's done. If I was Snell, I wouldn't go. I mean, yeah. I feel they should all do 2 years.
Yeah.
And then you're good, you know, or either you are who you are, you know what I'm saying, or you either improved or you are who you are.
Yeah, I have a feeling that, man, my hope is that Snell this year comes out. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, But you saw flashes of it.
Because you know, I think he when you're under your boss or a coach, you play a certain way. Maybe he feels more free, a little more confident. I get a chance to maybe showcase what I can actually do a little more. I start fresh. There isn't a background with Hoiberg's per se. So maybe this year he understands. Because he worked hard. I know he worked hard to get to what he was this year. Mm-hmm. I think he knows how much harder he has to work. And from what I understand, I don't think he lacks work ethic. I think Tibbs, you know, praised him for the work ethic and sort of their role. So maybe he took the scoop and maybe take a note out of Jimmy Butler's playbook. Worked a little harder. I think he's going to come back. I hope it surprised the Bulls and his fans about how good he actually could be. He has to be better. I just think he's a much better player than what he was last year. I don't think he's peaked yet. What his peak is, I don't know, but I know it's not last year. Last year, Snell. I think Snell could be a much better player than what he was last year at the end of the day.
I totally agree with that. I 100% agree with that. And especially, like you said about the work ethic, man, like, you wouldn't be on this team if it was a problem with your work ethic. So just not going to happen. Just not going to happen. All right, and here's one more thing about Bobby Portis, Chris. I don't know if you heard, but, you know, a few years ago, he had sent out some tweets, you know, some tweets about the Bulls that weren't super flattering.
Oh, really?
You know, they were kind of, you know, I'm a teenager and I don't like the Bulls and I'm a Heat fan kind of guy. Oh, you know what I'm saying?
That's cool. That's not the first time that's happened. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, he was, I'm trying to, let me find him real quick. I didn't judge it at all because, you know, you saw it and I saw, they say it was 4 years ago. I'm like, oh, he was what, like 16 years old? You know what I'm saying? Like, get out of here. You mad at something he did 16? This is why I'm glad that stuff wasn't around with me. And
yeah,
you was around,
yeah.
Bro. Are you kidding? What did he say? I don't see it here. But I my thing was, I really liked his response. Because his response to it was this. Bulls Nation, sorry for the tweets I sent 4 years ago. I was a boy then. I'm a man now.
Ooh.
And a bull. Then he said, D Rose, Paul, what kind of donuts y'all like?
That is how you respond. That's a response. That is how you respond. The man's right, man. He's quick with it. I like that. He knows how to write. I like that.
And one thing I saw, I was watching him in his interview. One thing I noticed, ain't no lying him. As the old folks used to tell me, ain't no lying him, man. This dude tells the truth, man. It's no lying, this guy. He doesn't really sugarcoat things. He's pretty honest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, man. But and that tweet says it. Saying, I was a boy then. I am a man now, bro. And a bull. I got your donuts, though. What you need?
It's funny and honest the same way. He didn't do a Pete, you know.
Oh, no.
Pete on a push kind of thing. I'm just here to, you know, my Bulls that play well.
Right.
I don't understand that. I remember writing that. He was like, yeah, I wrote that and I was 16. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's go.
You know.
And then,
it showed his wittiness. It showed he was funny. And it showed he's hardworking and willing to pay dues. All in one tweet.
All in one tweet. That's like the tweet of the year almost.
That's pretty good, man. That's how you get him off you right there. So, yeah. His PR, whoever he was earning PR, is pretty darn good, man. So, yeah. We'll definitely be focused on Bobby Portis and more from him in the summer league, which we will be watching. Go ahead, man.
When does that start, summer league?
In the summer. Sorry, Chris. It was too easy, man.
I know. Stop that.
It's an easy one. I believe in July.
Okay.
I believe in July it's going to start. But I'll definitely go look it up, make sure. But I haven't seen a date because I don't think they've set teams and all that other stuff yet. So.
Right. Just people that they just got the new players.
Right. Hopefully around that time we can get Jason the Wheel on to talk about it. Cause I'm sure that they're going to go. Because Jason, you know, was there last year. So
right.
I'm sure one of them going to go. So maybe we can holler at Jay and get some more of that in-depth analysis. Also, let's talk about the NBA championship, sir.
Oh yeah,
we didn't discuss that.
We didn't talk about that.
I don't think we talked about that last.
Okay,
I'm not sure, but no, I know we didn't talk about it because I would have remembered you going off about the Finals MVP, Andre Iguodala. But, I mean, Golden State won 4-2. As Chris accurately predicted, he had them in seven, but they won in six. I continued my hot streak of losing finals predictions by picking Cleveland in six, and they went up and laid a dud. And again, I haven't gotten a pick right since 2011 when Dallas won. So that was the last time I got an NBA finals right.
Yeah, you picked from the heart, but that, you called the Dallas one. You called it because you said Dirk was going to go crazy. And,
oh, I knew it. I just knew it because he had been there already. You know, he had already had that game, Chris, the game. He already had the game. He had gotten all that out of his system, and he knew this was it. There was no other opportunity for him to win the final. And you had Jay Keezy as your starting point guard, just making sure everybody was where they were supposed to be. And in the playoffs, Jay Kidd is going to do what he do. Jason Terry stepped up. Of course, Tyson Chandler balled. I mean, it was just his time. But it was mostly Dirk saying, give me the ball, get out the way. When I'm 7 feet tall and I'm better than all of you.
And LeBron's kind of
falling
up a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. But hey, he got triple double though, Dave.
Oh yay!
He got triple double from Carter.
Hooray! But in the finals, they gave the MVP to Andre Iguodala. Big ups to Andre, forget me. I mean, Chi-Town guy, you know, cool dude, right on. But Chris, was he deserving of this?
No, he was not. I was really peed when this happened.
Nice way of putting it.
Right now, my temperature is low now about this, but I kind of got over it. But yeah, clearly the MVP to me was Curry. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I've never seen the MVP give it to a guy whom the other team wanted to shoot the ball. Hmm. That's like a first to me. When the other team wants that guy to shoot the ball, and he wins MVP, I don't think he should get MVP. Now, he was only, all his shots were open. It was open because they double teamed Curry every time. Mm-hmm. Curry was the man. He gave everybody open shots. Even Klay Thompson. They didn't want to go off Klay Thompson. They didn't want to leave Curry. And who was open? Let's leave Iguodala open. He hit the shots. Hooray, you did your job. Curry is the MVP of that team. He scored like 15 points in the fourth quarter in two games in the finals.
Yeah.
He had one of the most awesome shooting performances in the final. He was the best player on that team.
He was.
He's the MVP. It's clearly Iguodala did his job. I mean, the MVP of the finals got pulled out the game because he couldn't shoot free throws in the fourth quarter. He's not Shaq, unless his name is Shaq. You know, he's not getting the MVP. That really disturbed me. It was almost like a feel good thing. Like, it feels good to give him the MVP. Like, no, too many awards given. Given by the NBA to these players are just getting like they're losing their value to me. You know, when Marc Gasol won the defensive player of the year, I just about lost it. If you're gonna get an award right, get the MVP of the league mostly right, and get the MVP of the finals right.
Mm.
That's not an award just give it to because it's a feel good story.
Mm.
You know, I would have given it to LeBron James had they won seven games.
Yeah, it goes seven, it goes to him.
If it goes seven, because you saw what was required of him to win game six.
Yes.
Another great game, which he didn't have.
Yes.
So he would have had that great game in game six. I would have clearly given it to you know, LeBron, and then went to seven games. But that really disturbed me, the fact that the feel-good story of the Iguodala in the finals hitting the open jump shots created by Stephen Curry. I mean, my goodness gracious. I mean, AB's shot was open because of him and Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Like what game were you watching?
You know, I go ahead. I'm sorry.
It just messes up my basketball disabilities and senses and all these senses, whatever. When I see that guy, the guy get the MVP with whom the other team actually wants to beat them. I never seen that in my life. That's really disturbing to me. But Curry, you know, is a nice guy. You know, nod his head, clap for him when he got the trophy. You know, but that wasn't that smart to me too. I'll give him the MVP.
Yeah, I totally, you know what it reminded me of? It's not this extreme, but it reminded me, it would be like giving Paxson the MVP for the first title that the Bulls won.
Right.
Because he was hitting wide open jump shots, you know. Just forgetting, you know, the best player on the court, best player on the team. And I know it's not that extreme because Mike had an incredible finals. You know, I know it's not, but it would be, it's kind of similar to that. You know, just a guy wide open and who's scoring 20 because he's wide open.
Right. And also, in game six, he barely guarded LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And also, LeBron James had an historic final with you guarding him mostly.
Which was my point at the end. I was about to hit him with that.
It was like, wow, you know, well, he really held LeBron James to 20 points a game. He had an historic final of all time against you. You didn't do jack. You just gave us better highlights to admire than LeBron James.
It's the, how do you give it to a dude who the guy you were guarding drops 35, 13, and 8, averages this in the finals, and the guy who was guarding him gets the MVP? That's crazy. Man. Yeah. 35, 13, and 8, finals MVP, Andre Iguodala. What? No. A guy that wasn't even starting, was he? Like, he began starting as the series went on, right?
Right, right. Hey, Dave, I got to go.
All right. We don't want to get into this, so all right. I don't want to go too deep. But, yes, I wanted to get that out there. Thank y'all for listening. Thank y'all for tuning in. Check us out on BileSports.com, TuneIn Radio, BullsPodcasters.com, and Stitcher.com. At BileSports is the Twitter. I'm Big Dave. That's C-Dub, a.k.a. Chris. We will return, y'all. Have a great week. Peace.